Hour three of the program. Let's talk a little health. Let's talk a little politics, all wrapped in one. Are politicians in danger of overreacting to the dangers of vaping? And if they do, could the consequences be severe? With more on this, let's join David Swenner. He's a law professor at the University of Ottawa and a member of the Non-Smokers Rights Association. David, good morning.
Good morning.
So we've got an issue. People smoke, it's terrible. And an alternative is vaping. And now we're finding out that there may be some bad things with vaping. And there could be a huge pushback by politicians to ban vaping, to limit vaping products. And I guess one of the things you're saying is let's not be too swift on this, eh?
Yeah, let's not overreact. I mean, you're absolutely right about just how horrible smoking is in terms of health impact. I mean, over 100 Canadians are going to die today as a direct result of diseases caused by smoking cigarettes. That happens every day. It's about 40,000 people a year. In the United States, it's about 40,000 people every month. And the reason they're dying is because they're inhaling smoke. It isn't the nicotine, it's the smoke that's causing all those diseases. So there are products that can offer people nicotine, people who wouldn't otherwise stop smoking, so they can get the nicotine they want without the smoke. And all indications are they're massively less hazardous. Are there still risks? You know, of course there are, just like a modern automobile has risks. They're just not nearly as risky as the sorts of things that existed a few decades ago. The concern is that if there is such a strong overreaction to the potential risks of new products, that it ends up protecting the really deadly old products. You know, the policies are being made as if cigarettes didn't exist, that we're only looking at the risk of vaping without putting it in the context of, but what would it replace?
And David, you've been an anti-smoking advocate for decades now.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit maybe about your path on this? Like when vaping first came out and maybe your initial hopes and now the stories, I'm sure for you it hasn't been straightforward either. You've gone a little bit back and forth on this.
Well, I mean, and it goes back a very long way. I mean, I was involved in the 1980s in getting legislation in Canada that specifically encouraged the development of less hazardous products to replace cigarettes. That was the Tobacco Products Control Act, which the cigarette companies managed to get thrown out in legal actions. But we've known, even before I got involved, back in the 70s, that the problem was the smoke, and that in effect what we had was this huge public health catastrophe that had an engineering solution that was a business opportunity. We just needed to get the policy right in order to do that and transform this market the way we've transformed markets to sanitary food, to science-based pharmaceuticals, to far safer automobiles, to industrial equipment that doesn't rip people's arms off, buildings that don't fall down, burn down on a regular basis, planes that are far less likely to fall out of the sky, et cetera. You know, wherever we find risk, we try to reduce it. When these products first came out, I didn't think they had a lot of potential. But technology changed so rapidly, sort of like I didn't think mobile phones had much potential when they first came out. They were bulky, they were very expensive, they didn't work very well. But we saw them change and become far more consumer acceptable. We saw a proliferation of vape shops opening with very knowledgeable people who had found these products, got them off cigarettes, and they were helping other people get off cigarettes. So it was a real groundswell of action from individuals, from entrepreneurs, and consumers who are responding to this the way that we had seen in the public responding to things like wanting other safer products and services.
We're speaking with anti-smoking advocate David Swenner about vaping and some of the pushback that's happening now on vaping. David, I talk to parents, I talk to teachers who are seeing vaping take off. Even in classrooms, kids are trying to sneak in a vape here and there. So we're seeing parents dealing with this issue. Now there are reports, of course, about some of the health problems related to vaping. So what do you say to someone there who's like looking at a problem in front of their face, and that problem in front of them isn't smoking, it's vaping? And sort of, how you make the sort of logical connection that, yes, I understand vaping may be bad, but think of the alternatives.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of risk-benefit, that we need to be clear about just how horrendous smoking is, that for a lot of those young people, it's It's their parents, their grandparents, their coaches, their teachers who are at imminent risk of dying because of cigarette smoking. We also know the biggest influencer on whether a young person would take up smoking is whether significant people in their lives smoke. If you can get those people off cigarettes, that's going to protect a lot of young people from ever taking up smoking. But one of the things that also concerns me, and I experienced this in the beginning of the 80s when I first got involved, and 42% of 15 to 19-year-olds in Canada were daily smokers, mm-hmm. massively, massively greater than the problem we currently see with vaping and with a massively more hazardous product. And in seeking advice on that, one of the best pieces of advice I got is, you know, be very careful about the campaigns that make a big deal about young people doing something you don't want them to do. Uh-huh. Because that's sort of like telling a three-year-old not to stick peas up their nose. That's like the old codger coming out of the house and telling kids not to do wheelies on their bicycles because it's dangerous. It just encourages them to do it.
Uh-huh. And so if we banned smoke, let's say we banned vaping, you think all those vapors would just, boom, beeline over to smoking again?
Well, we'd certainly see an awful lot of that. I mean, the reason that we need these products, and we've known for decades that nicotine is delivered by cigarettes, is particularly addictive. A lot of people are also self-medicating with it to deal with a whole range of conditions. People don't just give up. That's why after decades of all the things we've done in Canada, we still have about 5 million people who are smoking cigarettes. So those who have moved to another form of nicotine, if you take it away, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to look for a replacement. Very few of them are likely to just say, oh, now I can totally quit, you know, something I've never been able to do before. And they will move back to smoking. We're already seeing this. We're seeing Wall Street analysts talking about how all these attacks on vaping are great for the cigarette business because cigarette sales are now picking up. Well, then we'll see people moving to the black market. And the irony here is that the latest concerns about vaping-related illness, you know, are related to the vaping of a marijuana-related product, a THC product bought on the illicit market, where you have no control over the quality of the product. If we panic about that by making legal vaping products either unavailable or less available, we push more people into a black market for nicotine vaping products, where we're more likely to get disease.
So are there any limitations that you would advocate for on the vaping end?
Well, in fact, we already have many of them here in Canada. We have limitations on the sort of flavors that can be used, the descriptors that you can use on those flavors. We have restrictions on who can buy, where they can buy. We have restrictions on the advertising of the product. I think, if anything, what I do is ensure that we can start communicating truthful information to smokers about relative risk. And get away from things like any lifestyle advertising. We want truthful information, as I see in places like New Zealand and the UK. Mm-hmm. Let smokers know just how much less risky these products are, that, you know, how few people even know that the most prestigious medical body in the world, the Royal College of Physicians, has said vaping products are likely to be at least 95% less hazardous than smoking cigarettes.
Wow. Nobody knows that. So few people know that.
Yeah, and you know, people can only make as good a decision as the information available to them allows. So when we misinform smokers, when we scare them, when we convince them that vaping's just as bad as smoking, and an awful lot of smokers believe that now, they can't make an informed decision. You know, it's like telling people that, you know, driving sober is no less risky than driving when you're drunk. I mean, we wouldn't let those sorts of communications go out because we know the devastating consequences. And here we're allowing that to happen. We're allowing people to be misinformed. We're allowing a lot of abstinence-only sorts of people who see nicotine more as a moral issue, to try to conflate the two, you know, push their view that you have to, you know, just do what they tell you to do, just stop using a drug. And we've seen how disastrous that is with things like the war on drugs. We saw how disastrous it was in alcohol prohibition.
David, very enlightening, and I want to thank you for taking the time this morning.
Really good to talk with you.
David Swenner is a law professor at the University of Ottawa and a member of the Non-Smokers' Rights Association.